Hey everyone. So we tend to record our podcast several weeks in advance. And so sometimes things happen that make you wish that you had a different episode releasing exactly on a specific day. So what we're doing is we are very mindful of the pain and the hurt that's out there from the events of the past week. And we are also passionate about making sure that there is racial justice in America. And we are passionate about addressing the racial wealth gap and inequality in student loans and all of these things. And rather than sort of haphazardly put together an episode for today about it to make it very timely, I thought it would be better to maybe delay that to next week. So we're going to go ahead with our scheduled podcast episode today, which is about mental health, which is also a very important topic, mental health and student loans from the survey results that we did very recently, just looking at what kind of emotions people are going through because of their student loan debt and because of the pandemic. And then I'm going to be having another conversation with one of our consultants, Lauren Williams, who's a bit of a unicorn, and that there's only, I couldn't believe this when I found it out, but there's only 1% of certified financial planners in America that are African-American females. That's just like terribly low. That really needs to be much, much increased. So we talked about this actually, if you were interested in discussions of racial justice and student loans and the wealth gap, we actually discussed this in episode 64, which was published around February the 27th. So if you're a fan of going back and listening to older podcasts, would highly, highly suggest that you check out episode 64. It's called Election Hot Takes with Lauren Williams. And we get into discussing just a lot of different things about economic and racial justice and with student loans kind of in the mix around the 32-minute mark. So with that said, look forward to next week's episode, which will be a little bit more based off of just the things that we're seeing and the pain we're seeing in the country right now. Today's episode is going to be focused on mental health and just making sure that your mental health is sound and secure during this very difficult time for other kind of reasons as well, student loans and the economic effects of the pandemic. So thank you so much and hope you enjoy today's show. Welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. This week is going to be particularly interesting because we're going to be talking about some of the work that we've done around our mental health surveys and what they've revealed about anxiety and stress and just overall worry about student loan debt. I really appreciate all of you that did take that survey. It really revealed some quite stunning things, just stunning feelings that you all are going through. And I really think that we can really help. I'm not saying that I can wave a magic wand and just eliminate it. I'm not saying that I've got a magic pill for you to take or something, but I think this episode, if you've ever felt stress or anxiety or worry about your student loan debt, this episode's going to, one, give you some tools to deal with that, and then it's also going to show you that you're not alone at all, that feeling these things is actually kind of common, very common, in fact, unfortunately. And if anything, it almost kind of suggests that perhaps the schools have some accountability for exit counseling, that they should be pairing up their financial aid officers with maybe some of the school's counselors and mental health resources to try to give people tools to prepare themselves for the emotions that they're going to have in a lot of cases when you graduate and enter the world of having to pay this back. But the schools aren't going to do that because it doesn't make them money. So that's why we're going to talk about this, is we're going to give you some tools and just try to help you deal with this in this massive failure of higher education to address the mental health toll that their cost is placing on you. Apologies, too, if you hear ambulances in the background. We live close to a hospital, so that's also going to happen because of everyone living and working at home right now, right? The one thing that I saw that was most common in our survey, I would say by far the most cited feeling about student loans, was anxiety. What is anxiety? So I looked it up because, I mean, I know what it means, you know what it means, but I just wanted to get a little bit of a different kind of take on it. So anxiety is a response. It's a natural response to stress. It's basically fear or apprehension of what is to come, which is such a great description of anxiety. 80 to 90% of people, of you all in our community, cited that you'd had severe student loan anxiety at some point in your life. 80 to 90%. I mean, that's like, when did 80, 90% of people say anything, right? I mean, I don't think you can get 90% of people say they believe man landed on the moon or something, right? So, I mean, that's a really, really high percentage. And why do so many people feel stressed? What do you worry about? 90% of people feeling severe anxiety about their student loans, you're afraid of what's to come. You're afraid of the prospect of having to pay back an amount of debt that for your average person with a bachelor's degree might just be kind of a bad car loan. For people in your situation with a professional degree, it might be a large mortgage, right, on your brain for your education. So what kind of things do people worry about? I'm going to break it up into two categories. There's sort of math issues that people worry about with student loans, and then there's life issues that people worry about with their student loans. So first, the math issues. So there's three of them, three most popular ones. The first one is interest. So basically, the student loan interest is going to kill me. It's going to go way up. It's going to just grow and grow and grow. I'm never going to be able to dig out from under it. So that's one math anxiety or worry that people have, is the oncoming interest that they're going to be charged on their loans. The second one is forgiveness going away or getting eliminated. People are so worried about this. I'm in different Facebook groups where I like to follow along and just take the pulse basically on different student loan borrower groups just to see what they're saying. And every single day, there are multiple posts in all these Facebook groups about, hey, I'm so worried PSLF's going to get pulled out from under me. Or, hey, I just can't take it anymore. I think I'm going to refinance because I can't handle 20 years until loan forgiveness. I don't trust the repay program is real. You're going to hit me with a huge tax bomb. I'm not going to be able to afford the tax bomb. I'll go bankrupt. So I can't trust it. So that's another one. And then the third math issue that people worry about is the tax bomb that they're going to, when they're getting ready for retirement, be inundated with this giant tax bill of this tidal wave tsunami against their finances that's just going to wash away all of their progress that they've ever made, you know, saving for retirement, funding their kids' college, paying off their mortgage, things like that. So the other thing that people worry about, other category of problems that people worry about that cause anxiety from student loans is the impact that they have on your life. You could just argue that the math concerns or the math reasons people worry are similar because you're worried about those things, because you're worried about the impact on your life. But I do think that the worry about how student debt is going to impact your life is very unique and significant and different than people's fear of like the interest or forgiveness going away or, you know, things like that. Life issues, there's really three big life issues that people really get stressed out about because of student loan debt. The first one's buying a house. We see so much marketing and so much social media stuff, posts from friends, you know, hashtag adulting, right? We see all these things that tell us you need to buy a house. And buying a house almost feels as much about, you know, becoming an adult as having a kid or getting married or something like that. And so buying a house, I mean, it's, and two, I think that this is something that hits certain people a lot harder than it hits others. Like for example, all the time I hear, especially professionals, you go through this long period of training, right? Years long. You go through college, 4 years of college, and then you have to go through 3 or 4 years in most cases of graduate school. And then on top of that, you got to go through, in some cases, residency after that, or even a fellowship. And when you're done with that, you've rented your entire life. You're so ready for a change. All you want to do is own something. You've only ever owed something. And your entire life, you've owed something. Now you want to own something. And so you go out and you try to buy a house because that's the one thing that makes you feel like, you know what? I'm finally making progress. And people will always look at the monthly payment on a mortgage and they'll compare that monthly payment to their rental payment and they'll say, well, I can get a mortgage for so much cheaper than I can rent. And to that, I would say, I sure hope you can, because, you know, getting a home and buying something is a lot more expensive. It's a lot more expensive than just having to rent, but everything's supposed to be taken care of for you. So in fact, I read this rule recently in this really good book called Quit Like a Millionaire, which is by the people that founded the site Millennial Revolution. And they talk about how to get it, you know, a situation where you're just as good off renting as owning a house. Basically, you take your mortgage monthly payment and you multiply it by 1.4, which I thought was really interesting because that accounts for taxes, insurance, transaction cost issues. It takes into account maintenance expenses. So like, for example, take your $2,000 a month mortgage and then the comparable rental price would be 1.4 times that, which is $2,800 a month. So in other words, if you found a place to rent for less than $2,800, you know, you're probably better off renting than owning the equivalent place, which is really kind of interesting. So the buying a house is a legitimate desire. It's a legitimate goal. It's something that I hope to do one day too. Not because I think there's anything special about owning a home, but it would be nice to be able to have something that you can call your own at some point. And so student loans get in the way of that. Why? It's because student loans are this big monthly payment that feels like it's going to inhibit you from qualifying for a mortgage. It's going to stop you from getting the keys to the home. It's going to stop you from getting a good interest rate. In other words, student loans are this big obstacle that feels like that's preventing you from doing this big next step on the path of adulthood. So that's number one of life issues that student loans inhibits and causes anxiety about. The two is having kids. Having kids is the most personal, one of the most personal important things in someone's life for some people. Certainly not all, but a lot of people, it's just, you just grow up and you know that you want to be a mom or a dad, and you know you want to have a big family. You are part of a big family. It was super special to you, and you go into some field, you're a very caring person. You want to show that same care, you know, that you have towards your patients or, you know, towards your or clients to your kids, but then you feel like you can't. And because you have this huge debt, and daycare is going to cost you $2,000 a month. So how are you supposed to afford to pay $2,000 a month on your student loans and come up with $2,000 a month towards daycare? It feels like it's an either or. So I hear that all the time for men and women. And even though according to our surveys, women deal with this stress of wanting to put off kids because of student loans more than men. But having kids, it's just a huge, again, it's an obstacle. The student loans feel like a prevention mechanism for being able to have children. Just because you feel like, I've heard people describe it as, I feel irresponsible bringing kids into this world where I can't afford to give them good daycare, good education, get a house that's nice that they can live in, etc. And the third big life issue that I hear people kind of describe and talk about student loans preventing them or causing problems with their life is in their relationships, specifically romantic relationships. Not to say that we don't see student loans impact other kinds of relationships like parent-child relationships. I mean, parents feeling like they're scared for you, like you're never going to be able to get out of your problem financially, or you're never going to be able to get out of your hole. There is some strain to that, but really student loans are, you know, time I most often hear them mentioned as a huge stress is in relationships, romantic relationships, because we have this big fear, I think, in life of feeling rejected. We feel like we're never enough. We feel like, you know, how could someone love me? I mean, some people feel this way. Some people just think that they're all that and they're the second coming of Adonis. And if that's you, well, you know, good job. You know who you are, I guess. Your Tinder reply rate must be through the roof, right? But for most people, you feel like, oh, like it'd be great if someone loved me one day. And you meet somebody and maybe you go through a bunch of different relationships and you find somebody that you really like and you think this is really going to be a long-term thing. And then you're terrified that they're eventually going to find something else out about you that they suddenly don't like. And then that really promising relationship is going to end because of them discovering that thing about you that's this terrible dark secret. And people kind of view student loans as that terrible dark secret. So, you know, I think I saw this joke like on The Onion a long time ago where it's like a dental student walks into a bar like, you know, yells out their student debt to everyone just to make sure that they still have a chance or something like that. It's kind of weird. But student debt definitely throws ice water on some relationships, or at least people feel like it does. And so a lot of people too have talked about in our surveys that their relationships they've cited as relationships have ended over their student loans. Just the constant stress, the pressure, the feeling like they can't take that nice trip with their significant other back when we were still traveling, right, to Europe or, you know, Latin America or whatever for some sort of nice vacation. You can't do that because you got to pay all this debt. You know, it's just this big obstacle. So you've got these math issues that people are really worried about, and then the life obstacle issues that people worry about. But in this survey that we did, which we did in mid-May, by the way, in case you're wondering, this is a survey we did about 3,000 or 4,000 of our community. Basically, we have done this survey each of the past 30 days, during this corona period. And it just, we decided to add in a couple questions about student loans and mental health because May is actually mental health awareness. Well, May was Mental Health Awareness Month. So I would say I'm going to switch gears here to talk about a little bit more serious emotions. Not to say anxiety is not serious, but more, I guess you could say, more, even more damaging emotions that we uncovered in our survey because of student loans than just anxiety, which, you know, 90% of people, 80, 90% of people kind of said that they had had at one point. So we're going to talk about depression. And I don't think that most of the people meant that they had suffered clinical depression when we asked this, did you feel depression because of your student loans at some point? But some people certainly, I think, might have taken it that way, and some people didn't and used a more expansive definition. But still, anywhere from 30 to 50% of most of the professions that we surveyed expressed that they had felt depression because of their student loans. So when you feel depression because of something, to me, that's unconscionable that the schools don't look at that and say, we have to do a better job of helping people be more prepared for that kind of emotion. I mean, that's one thing that kind of bothers me, I guess, about higher education in general. How do I say this? Like, you could say that the moral compass of a lot of higher education is like very accepting, right? It's very supportive. You could call it like inclusive, right? Very inclusive. But then when it comes to protecting your mental health and your finances and looking out for you, like your well-being financially, which has this huge impact on the rest of your life, they suddenly become cold-hearted, ruthless capitalists, like ignore, you know, basically like, leave me alone. You should figure this out on your own. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Tough luck. It's just kind of interesting. And I just view it as kind of, I guess, hypocritical, you know, because if you had that inclusivity, commitment to diversity, all those like good things with deep care for your mental and physical and financial health, which they are contributing to the negative financial health in some cases that you experience by charging you so much money in the first place, then that would be okay. Like, I guess that would mentally compute for me more if they were that way for everything. I kind of just view it as this like lip service kind of thing for a lot of universities. I'm not saying all. I think some universities try to do a really good job. Like there are universities out there, you know, that even have funded specific financial health and wellness like programs within their colleges. So to those universities, thank you. Great job. Like please keep doing more of that and encourage your peer institutions to do more of that. And thank you for what you do. Deans that are trying to help their students and caring. But, you know, if you're one of these high cost schools, that's just leaders of the school is you're just getting in front of the student body and, oh, now's the best time ever to be a whatever. And, you know, oh, you're going to pay these loans back in no time at all. And then they also charged you full price for tuition during this corona pandemic, despite not giving you the in-person experience and charging you full fees for clinical labs and everything that I saw at some of the dental schools. I mean, honestly, screw them. I guess it's one reason why we don't get a lot of partnerships with universities because of my antagonistic view towards what they're doing. But this mental health survey kind of bears me out on that, you know, that you have these kind of feelings about your student loans and they're not doing anything to help you, or at least they're not doing enough to help you. So let's talk more about this depression feeling. Depression, according to the American Association of Anxiety and Depression, or the Anxiety and Depression Association of America, I think is actually how you say that. Apparently, about 1 in 5 of us suffer from some sort of anxiety disorder, including depression. So that's the most common type of mental illness, some sort of anxiety disorder, which depression is one of them. I'm not a mental health professional, so I apologize to those of you who are. I'm doing my best here. So before we get into this next segment, we're going to talk about some things that are going to be upsetting to some people. So just a little warning there that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about suicide. Please remember the number 1-800-273-TALK. So that's 1-800-273-8255. So if you or someone you love has ever talked about suicide or thought about suicide, please have that number handy. If you ever feel like that, please, please, please use that number to call someone and get help for free to talk about your situation. It's so important. One of the goals that I tell my team for Student Loan Planner is, yeah, you know, we are a business. We're trying to provide a service and stay in business so that we can provide for people's livelihoods, help others make a profit, like, et cetera. But one of my biggest goals for Student Loan Planner is actually to save lives, because I know from our mental health work that we've done that a lot of people, a lot more people than you would think, have considered suicide because of the hopelessness and fear around their finances, and specifically around their student loans. And you know, older people just don't get this. They don't understand, because, you know, a dental degree cost a McFlurry and a Big Mac back in 1972 when your grandparents went to dental school. I'm being a little facetious there, but you know what I mean? Like, the cost of school is so much higher. The cost of housing is way higher, in part because the supply of housing has just gotten ratcheted down so hard across the country for various reasons. And then also the cost of childcare has soared as well. So you've gotten a lot of things that have just really soared in cost, and that's preventing you, basically making people feel like they're prevented from actually doing their best and living their best lives. So I understand that this is really, we're talking about saving lives here for some of this. So I want to talk about suicide frankly in this, in terms of what people's suicidal ideation was in our survey, just with that kind of caveat that, you know, if this is upsetting to you, please skip this part. Also, one more point, remember too that, you know, besides that hotline number, if you have any mental struggles at all, you need to be talking to somebody. Maybe it's a best friend, but, you know, even better, talking to a therapist, a counselor, maybe a pastor. Just somebody that you can pay for regular meetings when you're talking about these issues, so that somebody knows that you're struggling. Because somebody needs to know. It doesn't need to just be your spouse. You need to have somebody else or partner. It needs to be somebody else, some professional in your life that's trying to make sure that you have consistent help in just dealing with this anxiety, okay? So with that disclaimer, in our survey, we found that because of student loans, this is, you all are mostly six-figure student loan borrowers. Most of you, about 70%, owe more than $100,000. So with that caveat, one in 16 people said that they had considered suicide because of their student loans at some point. That is really a scary statistic. We did the same survey about a year ago. We found one in 15 people had considered it because of student loans. That group was about 800 people. This survey was about 3,400, I think, 3,500. So the size of the survey is like almost five times higher, 4.5 times larger, and we're still finding that same statistic. One in 16 is a little bit better than one in 15, but it's not that different. So in other words, one in 16 people considering suicide due to student loans, I mean, that is debilitating. That's the part where, you know, I get pissed at these schools. Because they think that they can just charge you whatever, and okay, if the people will still join and still come and sit in the seats, then we should raise tuition. And, you know, oh, well, we have to decide between our research mission or raising tuition or worrying about costs, so I'd rather just keep our faculty happy and keep our ranking and among peer institutions. What they're doing by raising all these costs on you is causing all kinds of mental disorders, mental illnesses, and strain, and they need to be held accountable for this. You need to have a discussion of, I mean, yeah, you know, you think you can charge more and your product is valuable, but you're hurting people. So one in 16, that was a brutal number for me to read. We also asked how many people had considered suicide due to the pandemic, anxiety around the pandemic specifically. We found that one in 40 of you said that you'd considered that because of the anxiety around the pandemic. So, you know, a lot of people are losing their jobs. A lot of people are having massive cuts to their income. A lot of people are dealing with way higher levels of professional stress. The nurses and physicians that are dealing with, like, physically treating patients. But then there are veterinarians whose clients can't afford to pay as much for a lot of the procedures they would normally be able to pay for. So you probably have to do a lot more euthanasias than you might usually have to do. Mental health counselors and therapists are getting inundated with what people's way higher incidence of needing help and all the pain and suffering with that. You also have some professions aren't suffering as much from an economic standpoint, like specifically pharmacists and lawyers are doing pretty well relatively to some of the other professions that we looked at. but they're still struggling too. I mean, you're having lots of anxiety just around different kinds of lawyers. Like, you know, maybe certain kinds of lawyers are doing fine, right? Litigators maybe, but maybe other kinds of lawyers are really getting hurt, right? If you're in family law right now, you're probably not doing a lot of work in some cases because people are putting off planned things like divorces and other things like that. Pharmacists initially had some protection early on in the pandemic, all the extra overtime hours that the pharmacies were needing them to work because people were, you know, constantly coming and trying to get their prescriptions filled, but that slowed down some. So we're seeing that slow down for pharmacists and those folks to start to get a little more worried. And then you can look at like optometrists and dentists that have just gotten like nuked. I mean, absolutely nuked. You have suddenly half of the profession is making no money all of a sudden. That's a biased sample where most of our people that we're surveying are more tend to be associates and younger, where like people that had their own practices got hurt even more. I mean, it makes sense to me why people cited suicidal ideation because of this pandemic. And it's definitely a real cost of having this. And that certainly can get political sometimes. People that want to talk about reopening, talking about that's part of the cost. You'd lose lives too when you don't reopen. Some of the people that are really worried that this could become even worse are saying, well, that's something that needs to be treated, but not at the expense of other lives lost, right? So there's all kinds of stuff. People are just extra polarized. I mean, I'm sure we would have been polarized heading into a presidential election anyway, but it definitely feels pretty bad. I've tried to stay off of Facebook at least, or go on groups strategically. I don't know about you, just to avoid all of the political stuff because it's kind of draining. You just want to see your family again. You want to go on trips. You want to be able to hug your parents. It's a tough time. So I get why people have had that thought. I will say that young people are a lot less risk physically from the coronavirus. We know that. So I think that my guess would be that suicidal ideation is maybe driven by the economic pain and the risk of, or the fear of infecting others, like, you know, the fear of infecting loved ones, or, you know, the fear that your loved ones might pass from this. You know, I'm imagining that's why student loans had such a much higher rate of suicidal ideation than the pandemic did in our survey. So that really underscores how dangerous student loans really are if you don't try to get help at some level or put some thought into trying to prevent them from causing you stress. Now, within the student loan side of things, we found that the highest level of suicidal ideation was among veterinarians. So 1 in 10 veterinarians had considered suicide due to student loans in our survey. 1 in 10. 10%. That's unacceptably high. Maybe we might even do a podcast about veterinarians and mental health at some point, because that's just like, that was just crazy. And then in counselors and therapists, that was the highest risk of suicidal ideation due to the coronavirus pandemic conditions. So that was 1 in 14. So I'm thinking that, you know, they probably are dealing with lots of personal stories from patients, from pain and suffering, and it's just really overwhelming for mental health counselors, therapists, just dealing with all kinds of stress right now. I've even gotten emails from people who have lost loved ones due to suicide for both reasons. And it's heartbreaking, and we just got to really support and love one another right now. I don't know if some of the things we're going to talk about can save someone, but I think it can definitely help in pretty much any case. So let's talk about hope, because I've talked about stuff to depress you pretty hard, right? So let's talk about hope and why these issues earlier that I mentioned about the math issues and the life issues that student loans cause stress from, why are they not that big of a deal, or at least as big of a deal as you thought that they were? So the math issues, the three that we talked about, were the interest, forgiveness going away, and the tax bomb. So first, for the interest, remember student loan interest is simple interest and not compounded. So instead of, if you pay zero, literally zero, for 20 years, then your balance will pretty much double over 20 years. But if it was compounding, then it would go up maybe like quadruple or more than that, right? So student loan interest being simple interest and literally only growing by the same amount of interest every single year is a huge deal. And most people don't understand that. They're not aware of that because the interest is always the worst at the very beginning as a percentage of your total balance. Because of that interest amount never getting larger, it just stays flat and stagnant. But that looks like it's compounding early on. So people don't notice that. They don't know that it's not compounding because it looks like it is. And so people freak out because of the interest. So don't be stressed by the student loan interest. It actually works out so that the compounded rate of interest growth for student loans is roughly equal to inflation long term. The forgiveness going away, you can be worried about something and it's just not going to help at all. I think that there's like a verse in the Bible about like worrying who adds a day to his life by an hour of worrying or something like that. And I think that that's a pretty good sentiment, because if you think about forgiveness going away, well, people have been worried about a lot of things, right? Social Security is going to go away. We're going to get annihilated by nuclear weapons. I mean, these are like different levels of worry, I guess, or different levels of danger, because like certainly some are worse than the other, than those other ones that I just talked about. But forgiveness is in the promissory note. It's not like they can change it for people that already have it in there that easily. It would be very difficult. You'd have to pass an act of Congress, which would have to pass a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate, meaning 60 senators of one party supporting changing the terms of the note for IBR, because IBR is a act of Congress. So when were you able to get 60 senators to agree to something that would be very partisan? Because certainly eliminating forgiveness completely would be very, very partisan, right? It would only come probably from two directions. One would be from Republicans who are trying to end forgiveness, or it would come from, I would say, progressive Democrats trying to limit it for higher income earners. I think that those are the two scenarios that I could see loan forgiveness going away because of that. And in either case, you're not going to have a 60 vote supermajority of very, very conservative senators. You know, it just probably wouldn't happen. And then for the Democratic side, you're not going to have a 60 vote supermajority of very progressive or liberal senators. That would be very difficult to do. And two, you have to spend a lot of political capital on that to do that. And political capital usually gets spent on things that are bigger problems, like for more people than just student loans. As big of a problem as student loans are, you know, we focus on things like healthcare or Social Security or Medicare, right? Just, you know, things that are just affecting everybody that are huge problems. And that's what you spend your 60 vote Senate majority on fixing, you know, or trying to address that. You don't spend it on student loans. You just ignore them, which is why people have so much anxiety about it. And that's how the system got so screwed up, is because that's what Congress basically did, is they just ignored it and make new rules whenever they can, instead of simplifying it and make, you know, eliminating old rules. So forgiveness is not a problem. It's not going to go away. You shouldn't worry about it. It might get less generous, but it's not going to go away. Okay. And it's even unlikely that it becomes less generous. The tax bomb is not going to be a problem. That was the third one. The tax bomb is not going to be a problem because they're not going to be able to collect it. At the end of the day, if the tax bomb is what ruins your finances, I'm going to be stunned. Absolutely freaking stunned. Because the tax bomb is something that's already something in the IRS code for it. It's called the insolvency rule. Basically, if your assets are less than your debt, you don't owe the taxes on the debt. Okay, my CPA says that he does insolvency declarations for clients all the time that have some sort of bad debt forgiven for whatever reason, and they just get it discharged. That's not something to stress about. Now, in terms of life issues, those are real stressors. I get they are. So we said buying a house, having kids, and relationships were the three big life kind of issues that people have stress about because of student loans. Well, so for buying a house, ever since new guidelines came out in 2018, I think, from Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, the two big giant government mortgage providers, they basically said that they're just going to look at your IBR payment for federal student loans and just count that against you for your mortgage calculation. You're not going to not qualify for a mortgage based on that. Because one reason is because we tell people to really, really do not buy a house that's more than, we say, be really careful about buying one that's more than three times your household income. And so if you don't have student loans, you generally qualify for one that's 3.5 times your household income. So if you knock off the student loan payment, that'll set you back maybe from getting 3.5 times your income for the mortgage to just three times. And if you're buying a house that's three times your income, then you're probably not going to be retiring very soon anyway. So you're not going to have a problem buying a house. You just won't, not if you put in the time to plan and understand what your options are. The second thing is having kids. You know, I think that the issue with that is most people don't compare themselves to people in the population. They compare themselves to the people they knew from dental school or vet school or med school or law school. So you compare yourself to your peers and not just to people in general. So, you know, you feel like you can't have kids or can't have as many kids. And I'm not going to minimize that pain, right? I'm not saying that that's not a real pain. I'm just saying this, that if you compare, you know, your ability to have kids to someone who is working class, you can more easily afford to have kids. You know, you might actually get paid maternity leave or paternity leave. And if it's not paid, you can always do FMLA because you're probably an employee somewhere and benefit from 3 months of unpaid maternity or paternity leave. I'm not saying that's ideal, but the thing is you could do it. And the thing is you're comparing, you know, having kids to like the good daycare cost, the good education cost, right? The cost of the good school district, you know, in the home, it's in a good neighborhood with plenty of square feet. So the kid has their own bedroom, right? I would just encourage you to think about how back in the day, like people had no money and still had kids and they somehow made it work. Right. So if that's a real goal of yours, the worst case scenario for student loans, for federal loans, is just a percentage of your income. So that's kind of like a tax. And so people saying like they can't have student loans because of they can't have kids. That's funny. You can't have kids because you have student loans. Because student loans are a tax, then that's kind of like saying I can't have kids because I live in California. Because California's state income tax is about 10% for most middle class families. I mean, I'd have to double check this math. I didn't check it before recording this, but I'm going to guess that there's not a huge difference in the number of people having kids in California versus Florida where there's no income tax. I just thought like I should say among people of childbearing age, because I'm imagining if you just compare California to Florida, there's not a lot of old people in Florida having kids, right? But you get what I'm saying is basically having kids is something that you can do. It's something that you can do regardless of your student loan debt. And if you're not able to, or you feel like you can't, it's just you need to go through your budget again, and you need to really think through what, you know, are the required expenses of having kids and which are the ones that are just you want to have, right? And it might be unpleasant. You might have to do some things like move or sacrifice the quality of daycare that you want to have, or you might have to potentially ask in-laws or parents to move closer, or you might have to move closer to them to get some support. You can make it work if you have to. And then the relationships piece, you have to be real careful about that, because wanting what our neighbor has can be quite toxic to our happiness. So the third thing that we saw the stress was relationships, right? Romantic relationships. And we found in another survey that a lot of people said that they've had relationships that have ended because of the stress of their student loans. That makes sense, because there's a lot of stress in relationships because of money. 40% of marriages end in divorce because of money issues, or, you know, 40% of divorces are over money issues is what I should say, according to a lot of what you read online. But really, it's about communication, you know, communication and clearly communicating about things like money, sex, plans, careers, etc. Communication is really at the root of fixing relationships. And when you have stress over your debt, there will be people that would not want to date you because of your student loan debt, but that's true of anything. My youngest brother is the only one that I know who's actively on the dating pool. He's a few years younger than me, and he tells me that there's a lot of people out there, a lot of women out there that don't want to date him because of his height. So he goes on these social dating apps and everything, and it says, please message only if 6 feet and up or something like that, and he's like 5'10". So he complains about it to me. He texts me. He's like, I can't stand it, dude. He's like, there's a lot of good guys out there that are, you know, 5'11 and 5'10. But they don't love me because I'm too short. And I'm joking around a little bit, because if you think about it for relationships, yeah, there's going to be people that are not going to date you because of your student loan debt. But there's going to be people that won't want to date you because of your job or your previous relationship status. Or maybe if you already had kids from a previous relationship, or your religion, or even crazy things like what your horoscope is. Debt is one of many things, and a person who truly loves you is not going to let debt stand in the way. So it's really more your fear of finding that perfect person and then getting rejected only because of the student loan debt. And I don't think that's really ever a reason why somebody's going to reject you. I think there's always going to be some other reason where it was just one of many things that went into that calculation at worst. And again, what I tell people, what I tell our clients is that, you know, if you have a job that you're making more money at, or you're more passionate about it than you would have been with your bachelor's degree job, at worst, student loan debt's a tax. Usually it's a 10 to 20% tax on your income when you include the tax bomb. So worst case scenario, take 20% off your earnings. Are you still an attractive mate with a 20% pay cut? Most all of you, the answer is yes. You know, you getting rejected because of your student loans is a little bit silly on the part of the person who's rejecting you, which again, I'm not convinced that it happens usually solely because of the student loan debt. I usually think there's something else going on, but even if it is because of the student loan debt, you can't change your height, you can't change your different things, right? So there's going to be reasons why you don't, why you get rejected, and it's not necessarily going to be because of your student loans. The main thought here is if you have a steady job, you're not held back. You can do anything. You can get into rentals, investing, side hustles, picking up extra shifts. You know, you can make more money right now and you can really change your finances right now if you want to think what's possible versus how am I never going to make it. And if you were laid off, if you don't have an income right now, then consider this. Maybe it's time to go back to school and take on more student debt. Sounds crazy after I harped on the schools for raising the cost and just really hurting our community by just charging outrageous prices for tuition. Unfortunately, you can't not play by the rules of the game and use them to your advantage. So since student loans are literally a tax, meaning that I pay the same percentage of my income if I have $1 million in student loan debt or if I have $100,000, then if you feel like you chose the wrong career, or you feel like you are screwed because your income is nothing, it's going to be nothing for a long, long time, which I think is probably not going to be the case for most people. I think this is pretty temporary, what we're going through economically. It might be slow to recover, but I think it is temporary. Maybe you go back to school, right? I tell this especially to people who feel like they made a huge mistake and have all this student loan debt with a degree that was just isn't what they thought it was supposed to be. I'll just use one example. We had a chiropractor making $50,000 who had $250,000 in student debt. And he was like, I just got so screwed, man. I mean, the school just totally lied to me, said I was going to make $100,000 and more every year. I was going to be a doctor driving a nice car with great, great house and a great neighborhood. And instead, I'm struggling. What do you enjoy about your job? He's like, I just like helping people and healing people. And I said, okay, well, you know, is there something else you would do if you hadn't been a chiropractor? And he said, yeah, I would have been a nurse practitioner. In that case, we'll go back to nurse practitioner school. Instead of making 50, you'll make 100,000. And then instead of having 250 of debt, maybe you have to go through some private school's accelerated program because maybe you have to, I don't know, take some extra classes or go up to a school that has a higher acceptance rate because, you know, maybe your scores aren't as good or you're an untraditional student. And so you have to borrow a lot more to do that. Well, now you have 500,000 in student loans. Did it make sense to go way deeper into debt for a degree that pays 100,000? Yes. Because again, IBR, the pay and repay versions are 10% of your income. So 10% of 50,000 versus 10% of 100,000. Well, 10% of 100,000 is a way better income. And two, in the case of this person, I was like, not only do you get all these benefits, but you also get 401k matches, health insurance, like time off, PTO, all these benefits from being an employee. In this person's case, they hated being a business owner too. So if you're stressed out, if you're like, oh man, I should have done something different. Well, no, maybe go back and take out another degree. It sounds crazy, but in a recession, that's kind of what you're supposed to do because there's a lot of pain anyway. And so the downside of the money you're giving up by going back to school isn't as great. And that's only if you're just suffering so badly because you're like, oh man, I'm trapped in my job. I'm in this job that I hate. I want to get out. Well, good news. You can get out. There's no excuses for not getting out. In fact, you should go out and take out more debt, double down, because you only have one life to live, and leading a life just to pay the bills is a pretty crappy life, right? And that's not what I want for anybody listening to this show. I want your future to be so blindingly bright because you know exactly how to deal with your loans and you know how to deal with the emotions of your loans. And that, you know, fear comes from a lack of knowledge, I think, in a lot of cases. Apprehension about the future is when you don't know what the future is going to look like. And I can't tell you exactly what it's going to look like, but I can tell you pretty closely, if you do this, this, and this with your finances, this, this, and this is your likely outcomes for your future. And guess what? Both A, B, and plan C all look pretty freaking good. That's kind of what the core of what we do is really translate people's apprehension about the future into a plan for the future. One more thing that I want to do is I want to read through just a few of our responses in our community for those of you who have struggled with some sort of issue with mental health and student loans in the past to show you you're not alone. I do also want to say that we did get a lot of people saying things like, I'm so glad that I don't have this problem anymore. I'm so glad that I am understanding how to go for forgiveness. I'm so glad that I paid off my loans and I'm done with this bleep. So we got all kinds of responses, not just people that were struggling, but we did get a lot of responses from people who have struggled or are struggling from just mental health stress from student loans. I'm just going to read some of these things. These are comments that people made in our survey. One person said, "I feel like I'm unable to live my life to the fullest." Another, "I'm sad about making the worst financial mistake of my life. I'll never be able to pay it off." I think a PSLF person says, "I have an ever-present foreboding sense that I'm stuck at a specific job until my loans are paid off in 6 to 7 years." Another, "I'm frustrated because I chose a career that I don't feel passionate about that resulted in so much debt." Few more. "My fiance has $1 million in student loan debt, and so I feel tons of anxiety about his debt, but not mine." Another, "I feel misled and cheated." If only that person could figure out a lawyer to talk to sic them on the school that they feel like cheated them. Another person, "I go through periods regularly where I feel like," okay, this is a really intense one, okay? So I just want to say that. "I go through periods regularly where I feel like dying is my only way out of these loans. I'll never be able to realistically pay them off, and I don't feel confident that forgiveness will pan out." One more, "I think I'll always be able to pay my bills and make my payments, but I worry I won't be able to invest. I won't be able to make money off my current investments or accumulate enough wealth to upgrade my quality of life and enjoy myself. Maybe that last one is just too much to expect, but I worked hard to get a master's degree and I've worked extremely hard in my career. Because of COVID, my boss wants me to work insane unpaid overtime hours by suggesting if I don't make the company a lot of money now, I will lose my job later when there's a recession that the company can't weather. In the meantime, I'm denied my raise and benefits because of COVID-19 and I'm just so, so stressed." Okay, so for all of those feelings and for what you're feeling, again, there is a solution. There is a way to fix this. That is in terms of if you don't understand student loans, if it's the not knowing about what the future looks like, about all the different scenarios and all the different costs of all the plans and the tax filing statuses and how the loans affect your net worth over time and how, what if Congress does this? What if Congress does that? What if Biden or Trump wins? Like, depending on who wins, what should the plan be? All these things are in no way related to the COVID-19 forbearance. I was kind of anticipating like an 80 to 90% drop in student loan plans that we were going to do during the COVID-19 forbearance. And in fact, it wasn't that really at all. It was more like a 30% decline. So, I mean, obviously, people are losing their jobs. Like, people have less money. Like, it makes sense why people aren't necessarily booking as many student loan plans right now. But people are still booking them in a pretty large way, where we're still doing, you know, 100 to 150 a month student loan plans. And that's quite a bit. And, you know, we're getting, I think, that many because people still know that the student loan plan, which you're anxious about, is not the next 6 months. I mean, well, let me rephrase that. For student loans, you're not anxious about the next 6 months. You're anxious about the next 20 years or the next 10 years or the next however many years until this thing is figured out or done, or your net worth's positive, or you own way more than you owe. And so I think that's why we're still continuing to see lots of people booking those plans, despite there being this horrible economy, because the pain is real. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that we have the solution to that pain with understanding what the future looks like. So there's no more fear and apprehension. There's just a plan and a path and steps to do, and just a community of people too, by the way, to ask questions and share your feelings. And so I'm going to invite you, if you have ever struggled with mental health issues with student loans, to leave a comment or ask a question with our podcast voicemail. I would like to hear from you. Go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. Just type it into your browser, studentloanplanner.com/voicemail, and then just press the record button on your iPhone or your Android or whatever you're, you know, listening to this on, and just speak into that what student loans have made you feel, or speak into that your questions, you know, about student loans. And if any of the things I said about the how student loans are not an obstacle or not a barrier to life events like relationships, buying a house, having kids, etc., you know, if you didn't understand any of that or you wanted a deeper explanation, please ask that as well. We try to do the show based off of your questions and what I'm hearing from people on a weekly and daily basis in my inbox is kind of how I kind of take the show. please reach out if you have thoughts, studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. Would love to hear your thoughts about your mental health and student loan debt. And just to let you know, yes, you can be anonymous if you want to. Just type in anonymous as your name if you'd like to be anonymous. Thank you so much for all of you who have kept us around during this pandemic. And we'll see what happens with this next round of stimulus. I would anticipate that they're going to do the next round of stimulus in June, particularly if the economy doesn't get much better quicker or very quickly. If I had to bet, my current bet, and this is as of late May when I'm recording this, very late May, is that my guess is that they're going to extend this COVID forbearance for student loan payments, I think, until the end of the year, maybe until a little bit beyond that. So one thing that kind of was interesting that somebody told me is apparently September the 30th is the end of the federal fiscal year. So from a budgeting standpoint, like basically everything with the federal government goes October the 1st to September 30th. That's the federal fiscal year. It's not like January 1 to December 31. And so that's why they extended it to September the 30th specifically, because it'd be really easy to account for in the budget. And then the HEROES Act, which is what the Democrats wanted for round two of the stimulus, they proposed, in their $3 trillion stimulus for the HEROES Act, to extend that COVID forbearance until September 2021 instead of September 30th, 2020, which is what the current law CARES Act does. So I think the reason why they did that is because the federal fiscal year runs from October 1st to September 30th. And so it's just real easy for them to account for the cost of it by just saying within this federal fiscal year, we're not going to do it. Maybe you could make an argument that they might go by quarters. If you look at the quarters system, then if you kind of work back, I guess September, August, and then July. So June 30th would be end of a quarter. So that could potentially be a time that they would extend it to June 30th, 2021, which is what higher education groups asked for. And then you might go back again and say June, May, April. So I guess March the 31st, right? So probably March 31st, or they could do December 31st. So I think that if I had to guess, I would guess that they might extend it to December or March 31st of 2020 or 2021 with this next round of stimulus. Or, they might extend it another year. I don't know. It's just going to be real interesting to see what happens. I think a lot of it depends on what's going to happen day to day, week to week with the economy. Regardless of what happens with this economy and coronavirus, again, it's kind of irrelevant to your long-term student loan plan. You still need to know what to do with your loans and specifically to get the plan for you, not just for the random person on the street, but just specifically for you. So if you haven't already got that help, we'd love to help you. And if you just like listening to the show, thank you so much for doing that. Please just take advantage of the free option to ask questions for the voicemail that we mentioned earlier. We'd love to get more of those. Thank you so much. Remember that always, always, always reach out for help if you need it. If you have any mental health issue at all, the biggest fear that I have is people not getting help. The sooner you get help and the more we destigmatize getting help, the better off we're all going to be. So thank you, and make sure you love yourself this week because you are worth it.